Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca. Mesut Özil.
Oh, McCarthy's made a mistake and Nketiah will pounce and Nketiah will score. A loss of concentration and a gift for Eddie Nketiah.
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning to you too. What a night it was yesterday for the Premier League. An iconic moment. Fans in red spilling out into the streets to celebrate. Arsenal have 40 points. We are staying up.
We are staying up. We are staying safe as houses we are right now. And clearly that was the big story from the Premier League last night. I cannot think of anything else that might have happened that might be worth talking about or mentioning or even referencing in any kind of way. So it is a big, glorious occasion for the Arsenal, for Arsenal Football Club. It's our first ever win after a worldwide pandemic.
It is. And it's another first for this Arsenal team. So, mightily relieved. Isn't it incredible how the result of a football match can completely change your entire worldview quite quickly?
Yes, it really is. It really is. Maybe that says something about the absurdity of what football is and isn't. But at the same time, you know, this is who we are. This is what we do. And pretty much everybody listening to this, I'm sure, will be able to identify with that sentiment. You know, life is better when Arsenal win football games. That is my that's kind of my maxim. It's better when we win.
Listen, it's a good thing to live by. If it could happen more often,
yes,
that would be nice,
yes,
as well.
Yeah, I could get on board with that. Like doing a lot more winning, like, I don't know, some other clubs that I can't think of who might have done similar things this season. And
again, nothing springs to mind right now.
No. Anyway, I'm drinking here out of my completely unsmashed Arsenal mug. And I've got a coffee and we have won a game of football. So we should talk about that game of football. Arsenal 2, Southampton 0. And, you know, when I was watching this, I was thinking, this isn't particularly a great game of football. And
no.
In the cold light of day, I stand by that. Nevertheless, I do think there were some interesting bits and pieces that we can take from this game and this performance. I suppose the first thing that we will talk about is the lineup and the team selection. And there wasn't a great deal of change from the Brighton game. Granit Xhaka, of course, in midfield, I think immediately gives us a bit more structure. Kieran Tierney in at left back. And we had, who else? Rob Holding was in, of course. No, he played against Brighton as well. What was the other change? Eddie Nketiah up front.
And Emi Martinez.
Martinez, of course, in goal in for Bernd Leno. So, you know, fairly like-for-like replacements. Xhaka, I think we can touch on in a while. There were a couple of omissions, which we will talk about a little bit later on in the show. But what was interesting about the way we set up wasn't so much the team selection, but the team shape. You know, I saw Saka again in midfield and I was thinking, oh, well, this is going to be interesting to see if he can be kind of the link man, you know, with Xhaka and Ceballos. We need someone to connect the midfield and the attack. And I'm not sure we ever really did that all night, but part of it was because Saka played much more on the left-hand side than I thought he was going to do. And that was something we had a little chat about last night on the WhatsApp.
Yeah, he was playing almost as like a, a wing back, really, and Tierney was sort of narrower. I mean, Tierney's played as a central defender for Scotland. He's played sort of in that Nacho Monreal left side of a back three role quite a few times because they got some other guy who plays for some other team who's quite a good left back.
Right, never heard of him. Never heard of him.
Again, nothing springs to mind.
Yeah,
but yeah, I thought the shape was interesting. I mean, what I have noticed is that in each of our games since the restart, Arteta has kind of changed little bits and pieces. You know, whereas I think before the break, the shape was a lot more consistent.
Yeah.
In some ways, more simple. It feels like now he's, you know, I don't want to say tinkering, but sort of making little adaptations game by game that are a little bit more complex. And
yeah,
it seems to suit. I mean, Saka, the incredible thing about him is wherever you play him, he seems to look comfortable.
Yeah, he really does. I mean, what do you put that down to? Because I think you're right to point out that before lockdown, we had this kind of system in place and the pieces felt a bit sort of interchangeable, but the system more or less stayed the same. Whereas now there are tactical shifts, and he spoke afterwards about, you know, needing to use those tactical elements to get results and everything else. But do you think it's a case that he's sort of looked at just the physical aspect of what's going on in terms of his players and getting them back up to full speed? Like we saw Kieran Tierney, you know, go off at cramp because it was a hot day. And of course, as a Scotsman, he's not used to temperatures over about 15 degrees Celsius. You know, that's a joke, by the way. I'm sorry. They do sometimes get temperatures above 15 degrees. But, you know, this is a guy who, you know, hasn't played for 7 months because of injury, et cetera, et cetera. Came back, played a game, was left out of the next game. In the next game, you know, he's got this cramp which forces him off the pitch. We've Hector Bellerin, who we're going to talk about a little bit later on as well. You know, again, somebody who missed a lot of football, has now played three games on the trot, 390 minutes, as far as I can make out. You know, so do you think some of these tactical shifts are to perhaps ease the physical burden on some of the players? Because if you look in particular, let's say Tierney and Bellerin, your idea when you hear about those two guys being in the team is, okay, we've got these two fullbacks who are going to bomb on up the wings, they're going to cover a lot of ground. But in both cases, it feels like their movement and what they're being asked to do is sort of restricting the physical effort that they're going to have to put in.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And he's reducing their space, the amount of ground they need to cover, which I think, given their particular problems, is worthwhile. And maybe given the lack of sort of quality replacements potentially in those areas of the pitch. I mean, if you think about Mikel Arteta's style and kind of the intensity and the pressing and the zeal he wants his teams to play with, I always think it is a little bit akin to the way Mauricio Pochettino's teams at Spurs play. Well, the fullbacks were the first players to be rested in those teams. You know, they had four fullbacks and they would almost alternate them game by game.
Mm.
And given that Arteta sort of isn't doing that necessarily and doesn't want to do that,
and can't do it in fairness, you know,
with the right back he absolutely can't. And I don't know, even if he had everyone available, if he would want to, it does make sense to afford those players a measure of protection. But there is a cost to that, isn't there? You know, I think, you know, it doesn't always offer us the fluidity, certainly on that flank, that you might like going forward.
Yeah. And I think that for me, that was the thing about yesterday. We really struggled to move the ball and get the ball to our front three. You know, Nicolas Pepe, in whatever he played, 65, 68 minutes, whenever he came off, received 8 passes. You know, and I can see when people say Pepe's got to do more, he's got to produce more, which is fine. But we've also got to involve him more. We've also got to get him the ball in areas in which he can be dangerous. And we saw against Brighton that he can be really dangerous if you get him the ball in the right positions. So I'm not sure that this current setup or whatever it is really designed to get the best out of Pepe. And maybe it shouldn't be, but it is a factor in terms of how threatening we are from an attacking point of view. And I think the fact that maybe two, if not three, of our most dangerous moments in the game came from long balls sort of says something about the gap that we have in midfield in terms of creativity, in terms of vision, passing ability, whatever you might say. Really early on, Tierney banged a ball forward and Aubameyang took it on and should have scored. And there was the moment in the second half with that remarkable kick from Emi Martinez. It was like an amazing piece of distribution.
Laser precision, yeah.
Yeah, I was reading a piece in the Guardian by Nick Ames before the game, and he was talking about exactly that, that this is something that the Arsenal coaches, when Martinez was a younger player, this was something that they had spotted in him and thought could be a real asset to him and obviously the team. And we haven't, you know, had to see it a great deal or got the chance to see it a great deal because he hasn't played very much. But, you know, those moments of real Arsenal danger when Aubameyang hit the bar, when he almost found Nketiah in the middle, came from what was essentially Route 1 football.
Yeah, and I think that actually that was probably quite deliberate in some ways because Southampton, you know, they're a pressing team. They can be really good at pressing when they coordinate it right. And Arsenal, I think, looked to go over the top of that, looked to go beyond that. And Aubameyang was a real threat in behind, especially with Saka pushing on. It meant that he was pretty narrow and, you know, could sort of play almost as a second striker. So that was interesting. I mean, look, we'd all like to see Arsenal progressing through the midfield, and I thought the presence of Xhaka helped us do that. But clearly Arteta had looked at it as well and thought, maybe we can hurt them by going over the top, especially with the pace that we do have up front.
Yeah, did you feel, certainly I felt, that after the injury, Saka wasn't quite as prominent in the game as he was previously? I mean, he filled a role. He did a good job down the left-hand side. He protected that space between himself and Tierney very well. And when Southampton brought on Kyle Walker-Peters in the second half, you know, he's a very quick, very technically good right-back. I thought he dealt with him very well. But, you know, what I was looking at in the first 10, 15 minutes was a player who was getting forward and getting into dangerous positions. And maybe he was called back, or maybe he was told, look, don't expose us in that way. But it just felt to me there was a sort of pre and post injury Saka.
It was quite a bad injury, I thought, in the first moment. I mean, it was one of those where he was clearly in quite a lot of pain. And I was a little bit surprised that he stayed on, actually. So, yeah, perhaps that did have a bit of an impact in terms of impeding his progress down that left flank. I think I agree with you that he, you know, he was a little bit more conservative from that point on. But, yeah, I mean, look, I still am really amazed that this guy at that age, you can put him in a different position game by game, and he seems to adapt to it. You know, his football intelligence is excellent, and he has the athleticism that means he can sort of cope in whatever role Arteta chooses for him. I mean, it's funny, coming back from the break, you know, with Tierney being available again and Aubameyang playing left wing, I thought, oh, maybe we won't see Saka quite as much as we did, or quite as consistently as we did before the break. But I mean, if anything, he seems to be becoming more important at this point.
Yeah, and I think the fact that he's been used in midfield tells us a lot, maybe about the midfield options that we have, but perhaps where they might see his longer term future, not simply as a wide player. I think he can do an amazing job down that left hand side. He's done it at left back, he's done it in as part of the front three. But just, you know, we spoke, didn't we, the other week about midfield and the way that the Liverpool, who's that team? I was going to say, can't remember. Never heard of them anyway. Never heard of them. Yeah, doesn't ring any bells. Anyway, a midfield, you know, that has been effective in the Premier League this season, and the caliber, or the what's the word I'm looking for here, the profile of player who fits into a midfield in the Premier League these days, he certainly has that, you know? So maybe we're seeing Arteta giving him game time in a position that he might want to use him in the future. But look, that's down the line. Let's talk about the opening goal. A bad mistake by Alex McCarthy in the Southampton goal. You know, it's the sort of thing that happens to goalkeepers every now and again. But I thought it was really interesting on the sideline to hear Mikel Arteta constantly talking to Eddie Nketiah about pressing, about when to go and how to go, and all that kind of stuff. And he said afterwards, you know, I like to be a nuisance on the pitch anyway. I think we have to give Nketiah some credit for the work that he put in. He put in a real, real shift playing up front. He did a lot of, reminded me a little in, I'm not saying the two teams are in any way comparable, but certainly the work in the old days that Jack Charlton used to get John Aldridge to do for the Republic of Ireland, where he would just have him tear around, chasing down the goalkeeper, chasing down defenders, trying to close off space and things like that. And it wasn't quite as industrial as that. But, you know, I think he deserves credit for the way that, he closed down the goalkeeper, and he got just reward for it.
Yeah, I did think his work rate was kind of his most outstanding trait on the day. And I don't mean that as a criticism at all. You know, he covered a lot of space. He worked tirelessly in pretty hot conditions as well. I mean, you know, it was a very warm day in the south of England yesterday. And he will have sweated his way through that game. But I was really pleased for him, especially to get a goal away from home. You know, you get young players, and Eddie in particular was kind of introduced, I think, primarily in home games by Arteta. He's now getting his chance away. We know what Lacazette's goal record is like away from the Emirates Stadium. The fact that Eddie's gone and... Well, exactly. And the fact that Eddie's gone and got one on the road, I think will give him a lot of confidence. And actually... do his chances of sort of playing football more regularly no harm whatsoever. And I actually was encouraged by, you know, we think of Lacazette and Aubameyang having this sort of great understanding on the pitch, and I'm not sure if that's ever sort of borne out quite as much as we believe, but I thought Aubameyang was a really, really good foil for Eddie Nketiah yesterday. And there was one moment in particular where he was almost too generous, where I thought he looked square at when he could have shot. But there were a couple of moments of link-up play that I thought, OK, you know, maybe there could be a little bit of a partnership for these guys there between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, yeah. So, look, nice to see him score, and good to see an academy guy come through and take his chance. And, you know, he is somebody that Mikel Arteta has spoken very, very highly about. He really does seem to like him and see some real potential in him. So that, you know, that's good. And I think late on in the first half as well, there was another moment, wasn't there, when he was sent through by Pepe. Again, his movement, I think, is really impressive. I think it's quite sharp around the box, referencing that chance for, you know, for Aubameyang to find him from the Martinez free kick. You know, his movement was there. He'd torn away from the defenders, and if Aubameyang had put the ball in the middle, I mean, it was a good piece of defensive work by whoever the fuck it was, Bednarak, I think. You know, had that not happened, Nketiah was, you know, free for a tap-in, and that's down to his movement. So, you know, there are things that are encouraging about his game.
Yeah, and look, he's not perfect, and I think we all recognise that. But scoring goals is an invaluable trait, especially for a team who don't have that many goal scorers, who've lost one in Martinelli. You know, we do need something from Nketiah between now and the end of the season. And I think his link-up play, technical elements of his play, could improve, but they could improve. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's not always the case that a player walks into a team and immediately looks at home in every respect. I think the fact that he's getting these opportunities and scoring these goals is a great sort of starting position for him to be in. And if his all-round game can come up to match that, then we will have a very, very handy player.
Well, what do you think of the, you know, people will say Nketiah is in there ahead of Lacazette, and Lacazette has, you know, a lot of experience, former international player, of course, for France, had a great goal scoring record in France. But in terms of the kind of players that they are, we maybe think their roles are the same, but I think the way that they play is quite different. You know, people talk about Lacazette being the guy who can take the ball with his back to goal. I'm not sure that's really his strength, to be honest. It feels to me like Nketiah's strength is getting in the box, the timing of his runs, the movement, as I was talking about, and arriving, rather than being somebody who we look to link up play 40 yards from goal, which is what seems to be the case with Lacazette.
Yeah, I think Nketiah has a sort of natural capacity to kind of sniff out where the chance might be, whereas Lacazette is a player who wants the ball into his feet, you know, wants space. I heard Tim Steelman say that he's kind of a Goldilocks striker, in that he always is looking for the perfect shot, the perfect connection. I think that's a very good description. You know, he doesn't necessarily play on pure instinct. He kind of, he uses his technique, and he uses his laces, and he wants to kind of set that shot up. And Nketiah is someone who's a bit more instinctive and improvisational. And the big difference between them, I often think, is that Nketiah, you can see him kind of pressing on the halfway line, or let's say even making a tackle or interception on the halfway line, and 10 seconds later being within this 18-yard box, within the 6-yard box, to be on the end of a chance. I just don't think at the moment Lacazette offers you that, being able to sort of literally get about the pitch with the same speed that Nketiah does. And I think that, you know, he gives us more options right now. So I understand Arteta's inclination to play him. I think they will kind of rotate because it's an area of the pitch where Arteta feels he probably can and needs to rotate.
Yeah.
But if I was picking right now on form, you would have to say Nketiah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we have to pick teams to win games, but we also have to pick teams with an eye on the future as well.
Absolutely.
I tend to agree with you there. Can we talk a little bit about Rob Holding? Because,
yes, for sure.
You know, there have been so many question marks over the central defenders at Arsenal, and there's been a big question mark over Rob Holding as well, because he had a cruciate injury, he had another knee injury when he came back from that, and he looked like a player whose confidence was absolutely shot. Which is, you know, it's not nice to see, because you know this is a guy who's capable of better. You know this is a guy who, you know, you think back to the 2017 FA Cup final, you know, and this was a guy who was prepared and ready to go, like, head-to-head with Diego Costa. He absolutely, what's the word? He relished that encounter, even though Costa is, of course, a really difficult opponent, a very, very good striker. But, you know, Holding was there and he was into it. And what we saw perhaps before the lockdown and at times this season was a guy who didn't look sure of himself, wasn't maybe convinced of his own ability. And I mean that physically, you know, after the injuries, it can take some time to build up confidence. But I thought he was quite good against Brighton. You know, it's difficult to find positives from the Brighton game, but I watched the breakdown by Adrian Clarke, and I sort of got a slightly different perspective on that game, which isn't to say it was good or anything, but, you know, he pointed out that Holding finished the game with 96% pass completion. I know some people pointed fingers at him for the goal, but I really feel like that's just more unfortunate than poor defensive play. And I thought last night what we saw was a player who kind of knows he's got to take his chance and went for it in terms of his performance, because what I saw was a player who was reading the game, who was looking to make the headers, who was looking to dominate in the penalty area. I think he won 100% of his aerial duels. I think he had 8 out of 8 clearances. You know, he can read the game very well, and I thought that was the case last night. I think one of the dangerous moments from Southampton point of view came when Holding was about to head the ball clear and Ceballos flicked it on. I think it came for Redmond. That might have been the one where he hit it into the side netting. Yeah. But had he not been there, Holding was heading that clear. So I'm really encouraged by that from an Arsenal point of view, and it's great to see Rob Holding just take a step forward again, because he's struggled a little bit.
He has, and it's a big performance for him in that respect. You know, to come through the game with a clean sheet, looking comfortable, probably being the best of our defenders. I hope it will give him a bit of confidence. I hope it will enable him to get back to something like what he was. I mean, 2017 is a while ago now, and he was really, really promising in that run in towards the end of the season, you know, going into that FA Cup final. What a massive performance that was from him. And he's been interrupted then in terms of his development with playing time, with injuries. But I do think those positive traits are there. And honestly, I thought he was headed for the exit door prior to the spate of injuries we've had at centre-half. I really did think his time at Arsenal might be, if not coming to a close, then he might get into that sort of Callum Chambers position of going out on loan for a protracted period. But he's got a chance now, and maybe he senses that. Maybe he looks at, you know, Luiz, Mustafi, Sokratis, the uncertainty there, and thinks, I could actually be a part of things here if I can make this work. And I would love him to do it, because he seems like a great guy. And he's been, you know, in a really difficult position coming back from a very, very serious injury. And he's not had an opportunity to build up anything like a rhythm. You know, it's not even like Bellerin, where relatively swiftly he was kind of first choice again and able to kind of find or start finding something like his form on the pitch. Holding's just had bits and pieces, the odd under 23 game, the odd run out here and there. And for a player coming back from a long-term injury, that isn't enough.
No, and I wonder as well when Mikel Arteta, obviously he had no choice but to put him in against Brighton because of the Luiz suspension, the Socrates injury, sure, etc. But I wonder if Arteta, you know, whatever he might think of him in training, you've got to see what a player does on the pitch. And I wonder if this is if this is something that might change Arteta's mind. Or, you know, I don't know what Arteta's thoughts are on holding anyway. You know, there have been stories that maybe he was considered surplus to requirements or somebody who we might consider selling. But when you look at the lineup of central defenders that we have, if you want one to sort of make it from that group with question marks over it, it's the 24-year-old Englishman. You know, and that's not just because he's English, by the way. I just mean, you know, Socrates, not a player for the future. Luiz, not a player for the future. Mustafi, not really a player for the future, in my opinion, even though I recognize that since Arteta's come in, he has done a lot better than he did previously. So, you know, I think, anyway, Arteta is the kind of guy that if he sees something from players, I mean, he's talked a lot about character, hasn't he? He's talked a lot about, you know, showing that you're ready and showing that you can do it when your chance comes. And in the last two games, I think Holding has shown Arteta that he's still got something about him as a player. You know, early days, of course, and sample size small. But for me, from last night anyway, Holding was probably the biggest individual positive on the night.
Yeah, I think so. Especially in that position, because we desperately need something there right now. And I agree with you that he really could be a part of things. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say, oh, we found Saliba's partner on the basis of this one game. But, you know, as we know, we need at least probably five centre-halves in the squad, and it would be good. It would be great if one of them was Rob Holding. If he can recover and take that spot, I would be really pleased to see it.
Yeah, look, I'd rather see Holding in the team than David Luiz, for example. You know, simply because, look, if Holding makes a mistake, maybe it's something he's capable of learning from still at this relatively early stage in his central defensive career. You know, Luiz, not so much. So, look, I hope he can do it, and I hope he can take all the encouragement that he needs from last night's performance. I suppose we might speculate as to whether he'll start on Sunday against Sheffield United, but let's leave that maybe till part two. The substitutions, given that we talked a lot about Mikel Arteta's substitutions against Brighton, how do you feel he worked it last night in terms of what we saw from Arsenal's overall performance? I mean, did he recognise some of the things that he didn't in the game against Brighton?
I'm having to go back and look. So the first change was Joe Willock, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For
Pepe,
which brought with it a little bit of a shift in shape, as far as I could tell. I couldn't quite tell, actually. Did Willock play from the right, or did he sort of tuck inside?
Sort of. I'd have to look at his heat map, to be honest.
I think that it went to more of a conventional back five at that point, as far as I saw, with, like, Bellerin and
Saka. It was like a 5-3-2, I think, with Willock on the right side, maybe.
I think you're right, because when Willock came on, he was making a three signal with his hands, and I presume that referred to the centre-halves and, to an extent, the central midfield. I mean, that was a decent enough shape and gave us a bit of structure and solidity. And then, what was it, Lacazette and Maitland-Niles, bit of fresh legs with 10 minutes to go. I could see the logic there. Kolasinac came on for Tierney as well in that period. I mean, I've got to be honest, I didn't have a massive reaction one way or the other to any of our substitutions. Did you?
Not really. I just thought that, you know, when I think back to the game, and I think there was one chance that Southampton had. I referenced the Redmond one, but that wasn't really to do with open play. It was at, I think it could have been that Ceballos header. The one chance that they did have was when Shane Long got in behind. I think Hector Bellerin played him onside. And Martinez made a good save and then made a good second save.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at Willock's heat map here. He's in central midfield. He's on the left wing. He's on the right wing, and he's up front. So he was kind of everywhere. I'm not sure we can glean a great deal from his heat map. But I thought what they did, the substitutions, was allow us. I can't. I don't want to use the word control because it doesn't. It didn't feel like we were in control of the game itself, but it felt like we were coping with what Southampton were doing. If that makes sense. So we weren't being pulled apart, and I don't think the substitutions had any kind of negative impact on us, and I think what they did was probably just give us the energy to maintain the organisation and the discipline that we showed, which made Southampton, for the most part, fairly ineffective from an attacking point of view.
Yeah, and I think energy is the key word there, and it's a difficult balance for Mikel Arteta because I think he wants to bring on, if you look at the players who he's bringing on, he's typically bringing on Willock, he's bringing on Maitland-Niles, he's bringing on Eddie Nketiah if he doesn't start. You know, he is looking to introduce people who we know have that athletic capability, who have that energy, but he wants to not make so many changes that it disrupts the system entirely, which is the risk with five substitutes. I thought the balance of that was probably better at Southampton. And it's interesting, I mean, just on the subject of the subs bench, Socrates was back on the bench, which is, I mean, even if he's not a key player for us, is welcome because we need a bit of depth. And he brought Smith with him, didn't he?
Yeah. You know,
academy midfielder too. So I wonder if we might see a bit of that, given that we have 10 substitutes. You know, will he every so often bring a guy who wasn't necessarily going to be involved? I think Zach Medley's already been involved in a bench this season. So, yeah, I like that too, just giving someone that first-team experience of travelling with the team, being part of the team. I think it's beneficial, and why not while we have the opportunity?
Yeah, yeah. Look, we saw the players on the bench with their parasols or their umbrellas to keep the sun off them. I don't know if there's... I think that Mesut Ozil picture could be iconic in its own way.
It was. Yeah,
sorry, go on.
It's a meme waiting to happen, that, isn't it?
Yeah, and our friend at Poorly Drawn Arsenal did a brilliant one of Lacazette, so make sure you check that out on his Twitter and his Instagram. I mean, I think the Matt Smith inclusion was because of the exclusion of Matteo Guendouzi, so we're going to talk about that a bit more in part two. But before we go there, you know, we might as well talk about the Joe Willock goal. We had a free kick just outside the area. I feel like there was scope for the referee to play on and to try and give us an advantage.
Clearly he felt it was a red card straight away, and he was like, I mean to be honest, the red card really helped us. You know, it kind of took, I mean, the fact that we scored as well, we kind of double won in the situation. But I was watching it being like, he's going to score, let him go. But I guess, you know, it allowed us to control the game, and a bit of fortune maybe with the goalkeeping on both goals. I mean, Arsenal haven't had much luck or had much go this way since football restarted, so I'll definitely take it.
Yeah, I'm just watching it again. Lacazette's about to take the free kick. It's a bad free kick that hits the wall, and then he gets a second bite. It's a stinger of a shot. Yeah, maybe keeper could do better there. I mean, I think if that was your own keeper, you'd be saying that's not great.
Yeah.
But, you know, given it's the opposition keeper, I'm much more about crediting Joe Willock for his awareness and his, you know, his willingness to follow the ball in and to tuck the ball away. I think I've got a question about Joe Willock in the second part, so we'll do that. So look, just a nice piece of play from the young man. And you know, when we've, I think, touched this week on the lack of goals that we've got from central midfield, it's nice to see an Arsenal central midfielder score a Premier League goal.
Yes, and I think he will score goals, Joe Willock. I mean, you put him in a team and he will score goals. He did it at youth level, and he's actually done it relatively impressively at senior level too. So, and great to see two academy players, and they're great mates as well, Joe Willock and Eddie Nketiah, getting the goals for Arsenal.
Yeah, I had this weird sensation after the game last night where, you know, this is sort of one of those games that when you look back in the history books and you look back at the result and you look at the goal scorers, you know, if maybe it's one of those games where you can sort of point to as the start of, you know, what's going to be the next generation at Arsenal, right, the next iteration of Arsenal. Like if you were to go back, you know, to the late 80s and stuff like that, and you see, or mid to late 80s, and you see a game in which we've won where, you know, it's Rocastle and Thomas with the goals. And I'm not sort of saying these guys are going to be Rocastle and Thomas or anything like it. But, you know, just one of those games where what Arsenal are going to be becomes apparent, you can sort of say, okay, there's where start happening. But that could be just a weird thing in my head.
So you might also look back and be like, who are those guys? What happened to them?
Well, I hope not. Yeah. I hope that this is something we look back on and you know, these are performances that these young players can build on. And it is apparent that, you know, we are a club and we are a team that is going to have to build to the future. And these guys can be part of that and should be part of that, particularly at a financially challenging time in football's history. So look, is there anything else from the game itself that you want to touch on, or the result, the performance, that you think we need to go over before we go into part two?
Just to say that, you know, while their keeper wasn't great, I thought Emi Martinez was pretty solid.
Yeah.
And he has, you know, he has an energy around him that sort of is very calm. And maybe, I mean, I hope, touch wood, this isn't wrong, but I just feel relatively secure with him there. I think as backup goalies go,
yeah,
he's pretty steady and he seems like he has a very steady character.
Did you hear him talk to Joe Willock?
I think
there was a corner, and I'm pretty sure it was Martinez. There was a corner from our left hand side anyway, and I think Willock was at the near post, and Martinez was saying something to him like, "Come on, Joe, this is not getting past you. It's not come on, Joe, you can do, you know, that kind of stuff," which I really like. Mm. You know, sort of spread a little bit of assurance and give the young players confidence. So yeah, I think you're right. You know, concerns over Martinez really have been more about, you know, his age and the relative lack of playing time he's had at that age than what we've necessarily seen from him as a player.
Yeah, I think so. It's not like he's got this back catalogue of howlers, you know, like some goalkeepers we've had in the past. I think people have sort of looked at it and thought, well, you know, why hasn't he played more football? But he did have a really transformative loan spell at Reading where he was outstanding. And I think since he came back, he's looked pretty decent on every occasion for us. So I'm actually, it's really terrible that Leno's out, and thank God it's not worse than it is. But I'm pleased for Emi Martinez that he is now going to get a little bit of a run. I mean, he really has waited patiently for that. So I'm pleased for him in that respect. And in a season where it doesn't feel like it matters enormously, I think we can afford to give him that.
All right. Okay. Well, look, that just about sums that up. That's Southampton 0, Arsenal 2. The greatest result in Wednesday's or Thursday's Premier League history. So we will take a little bit of a break here. We're going to come back with some big talking points, because there were some bits and pieces that went on that we're going to have to address. So we'll do that with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arseblog. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arseblog on the Arseblog Facebook page. Facebook.com. Oh, fuck. I forgot to do Facebook. And the Arseblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arseblog member on Patreon. You can do that by going to patreon.com/Arseblog. Support everything we do on the site for a fiver a month. Right. We got to get into the Guendouzi thing. So sure. We've got questions, but let's sort of lay out the scenario as we understand it. He was left out entirely of the squad last night. Mikel Arteta said, what was his phrase? Not tactical reasons, squad management. So that's another one of our stock phrases for, we're leaving a player out. We're not going to tell you exactly why. The Brighton thing, right? He got off from the FA. He was given a reprieve, I guess, by not being punished by the FA. And to me, anyway, that incident with Mope was not worthy of being dropped from the squad for a game like this, right? I don't really understand the logic of that, if that's what it was. And actually, Mikel Arteta said, no, it wasn't that. Whatever we do, we'll keep internal. So would it be reasonable to assume that there was a conversation, at least, with Guendouzi this week, which didn't quite go as well as we might have hoped? Would that be a fair assumption to make without sort of wandering too far into the realms of speculation as to what exactly might have happened, or without using the words bust and up?
Maybe. I honestly don't know. When he got off with the FA, I did tweet saying that Guendouzi got off with it with the FA, but I don't think he will with Arteta. And I didn't necessarily mean just the incident at full time. I do think Arteta won't have taken particularly kindly to the stories that have come out of Brighton about what Guendouzi was saying on the pitch. You know, all this stuff about he was saying about how he earns more than other players and things like that. I don't see that sitting well with Arteta. I know things go on the pitch in football matches, but I don't think that's particularly, this is a very ridiculous word to use, but it's not really becoming, is it, of a young player coming through at Arsenal. Maybe there was more to it, but I clearly think Arteta's thinks Guendouzi has a bit of a discipline issue. Mm. Arteta is not alone in that respect. That has followed Guendouzi everywhere he's been his whole career since he was a teenager at Paris Saint-Germain at like 15 years of age. People knew he had this big attitude with him. Mm. And I think Arteta's looking to sort of shape that and hone it and define it. But it's a really tricky one, isn't it? Because what I can't tell at the moment is if Arteta will see that element of Guendouzi's personality and think, that's great, it just needs to be properly applied. Or if he'll be looking at it and thinking, I don't know if I want to handle and deal with this in the long term.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's not the first time that there's been a disciplinary issue with Guendouzi this season, of course, because there was an incident during the warm weather training camp in Dubai where I think that there was some issues with Guendouzi's behaviour, and there were some angry exchanges, I think is what the reporting said at the time, between Arteta and the coaching staff. He was left out of the next game when we came back from Dubai, which Arsenal won 4-0 against Newcastle. So there's a little bit of previous there, and as you've said, there's been some previous at other clubs that he's had. You know, this is a player with a real personality. Whether you like it or not is another question. And he is, I think it's fair to say, based on my mentions and some of the comments that, you know, I've seen this morning, he's a player who really, really divides opinion among Arsenal fans.
In a big way.
He really is.
In a big way.
Go on.
We had a couple of questions that I thought summed that up.
Yeah.
So like Sam, who's at SK Arsenal, said, with rumours doing the rounds this morning regarding a possible exit for Mateo, I can't help but think this will be a big mistake and a huge backward step in terms of recruitment strategy. And then on the other side, you know, guest T96 said, why is there so much desire for Guendouzi to stay? He's an undisciplined young midfielder who is inconsistent, cannot head a ball, and miraculously is viewed as an expensive asset. Get 45 million, tidy profit, move on. Isn't that the dream model anyway?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what I've got. I've got Johnny Bowden at Johnny underscore B underscore AFC. He says, Guendouzi is a figure you should be developing. Young, combative, always forward thinking. His role and positioning should be coached. Mm-hmm. Why instead are we looking to move on? We already have holes in midfield and he could answer a lot of issues in the future. And then, you know, King Khan, who's at I'm a Arsaholic on Twitter, says, how much do you seriously think we could get for Guendouzi? I'm not his biggest fan. I don't think it will hurt too much if he goes. And we also had one on the Discord as well from 1.76 acres saying, with rumours swirling about regarding interest in Guendouzi from abroad and considering he was left out of the squad today and maybe on the manager's bad side, at what price would you start to contemplate selling the kid? This is based on a story that emerged in L'Équipe today, which says that during this conversation, that Arsenal and Guendouzi had, you know, the prospect of his departure was brought up and Guendouzi wasn't averse to it. Arsenal apparently don't appear that averse to it as well. So, you know, this is an interesting situation. I mean, I will just say I've always been a little more circumspect about Guendouzi than some people. I can see that there's talent there. And, you know, I see the argument for wanting and needing players with personality because I think it's important. I think Arsenal have been a team of nice guys for too long, and I don't really have any issue with players who are, you know, can be a bit of a prick on the pitch. I don't really have a problem with that. Like the Guendouzi, I earned this stuff. It's not great, but like, fuck it. You know, people say stuff to each other all the time on the football pitch, all the time. And like, you know, I think it's a bit much for someone like Mope, who is a complete wind-up merchant himself, to sort of go to the, you know, the fainting couch
of
because
course.
somebody said something about money to me. It's like, come on, you know, let's be realistic here. I think they might have, you know, put that story out there because generally speaking, people find that kind of stuff a bit crass, you know, how much you earn or whatever. You know, it suggests that there's a focus on money. I sort of take that with a little bit of a pinch of salt. I don't have a problem with that kind of stuff. I don't have a problem with a combative personality, or I don't have a problem with a player who really, really dislikes losing. And I think, you know, it's easy to forget, like, the sort of personality that Guendouzi can show on the pitch in a positive way. Think about the Aston Villa game when we were down to 10 men and he won us a penalty and he really, really helped drive the team to an unexpected victory, you know, back earlier in this season. So I think those qualities are useful. But at the same time, I think there has to be a way of harnessing them and making them work in a positive way more often than not. And that is where I think maybe Arteta has got some doubts.
Maybe, but I also think that Guendouzi, just based on those natural traits, I think you're absolutely right to say that what's bad about him is kind of what could be good about him. You know, that fire in him could be his fuel. But it means that he requires maybe a bit more management than certain other personalities. And as much as we can look at it from the outside and go, oh, this spells trouble for Guendouzi. And I know that there are people in Arsenal who are a bit sort of fatigued of his personality already. I do think that maybe it reflects as well, I don't know what to say, but like that Arteta is paying him this degree of focus, I think could suggest that he thinks there's something there worth persisting with, if you see what I mean. That, you know, like the kind of sort of prodigal son thing, or like where someone's kind of
tough love,
you're hard
kind
on
of
someone.
Stuff.
Yeah, you're sort of hard on someone because you want them to change because you think it would be good. I don't know.
I know what you mean. Yeah, I know. Like, yeah. You want to be like a little bit strict, because if you can instill a little bit more discipline, you can get a lot more out of the potential that a player has. That kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I'm trying to think of other personalities like that in football, but I suppose it's like, I mean, it's not the same, OK? He's a very different person. But if Roy Keane, for example, had not had Sir Alex Ferguson, he probably just would have been a guy running around just kicking people, trying to get them off the park. But it's about that being kind of channeled and allied into sort of a competitive spirit that can sort of make a player, you know, significantly better. And I think that if Arteta can somehow instill that degree of discipline in Guendouzi, we will have a really, really interesting player on our hands. I think where it becomes tricky is in a scenario where Arsenal get offered a lot of money for Guendouzi.
Mm.
And then you sort of have to look at it and be like, well, how much investment is worth it at this stage? If we're offered the chance to get enough money for Guendouzi, and maybe we wouldn't, maybe that's pie in the sky, but that we could bring in an established, experienced, ready-made midfield player, then I think you're in a, then that's a quandary at that point.
Yeah, look, I think another key part of this discussion is the contractual situation.
Mm.
And Guendouzi signed a 4-year deal, apparently, which means that we're now 2 years out. So
yeah,
we're at the point where we have to make a decision. By Raul Sanyahi's own admission, you know, he talked about a scenario where player contracts are 5 years. But once you get to the 2-year point, you have to make a decision. That decision is, do you extend the contract of the player? And if you don't, 2 years is the point at which you sell, because he's got more value, and you're not in a, you don't allow yourself to get to a situation where a player's got 1 year left on his contract and you're compromised. Your ability to negotiate is completely fucked. You know, we've had too many of those situations at Arsenal in the past. So this is a scenario where we want to see, you know, the people who are running the football club at executive level, you know, to make the decisions that they said they were going to make, to operate in the way they said they were going to operate. And I feel like perhaps this is one of those where if Guendouzi, if the report in L'Équipe is accurate, if he's not averse to the idea of leaving Arsenal, is he fully committed to Arsenal? Do you know what I mean? Is it?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he's going to go through the motions on the pitch or anything else. But if Guendouzi, within that conversation, said, no, look, I want to make it here. I want to be an Arsenal player for the next 4 or 5 years. You know, I'm fully committed to this project. I'm a young player. I can be part of it in terms of the profile, age profile of the players that we feel like we're going to need going forward. He's absolutely it. He's absolutely the right age to develop and become part of a project, if that's what he wants and if that's what we want. But it's those questions which then feed into that 2-year thing. You know, if it's not 100% what we want, and if it's not 100% what he wants, we're now at the point where that decision needs to be made.
Yes, I think that's true, because he is a valuable asset, you know, and it would be a travesty to, having sort of taken the gamble on him, got a player who's probably worth a lot more than what we paid for him, it'd be a travesty to let that value diminish by allowing him to get near the end of his contract.
Yeah.
So I imagine that's what we will do.
Mm. Yeah, well, look, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. It does feel like, you know, this is a situation that has kind of come to a head, which forces, you know, either another conversation. You know, this, I think it's easy to think that, right, it's done and dusted. Things can change. Things can get on the right track as quickly as they can get off it, you know?
Oh, yeah,
It's not like this is an irreparable situation, but given the profile of what's happened, the fact that it's in, you know, the fact that there's a story like this in L'Équipe the morning after Guendouzi has been left out, suggests that there's stuff going on in the back channels, you know, and part of this, I'm sure, will have been to alert potential suitors to Guendouzi's possible availability. You know, he's willing to leave Arsenal. It's like a ding, 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 ding to any clubs that might be interested in him. who might be prepared to pump, put up the money. So look, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. But I have a question here, and we'll move on. This comes from the Discord. It's from Toby Lilyleaf, who says, can we talk about Bellerin? A wonderful man and an Arsenal boy at heart, but can or should we do better? Or do we still need to be patient?
It's a good question. I think that we touched on this in part one, but I think that Bellerin is in part being kind of managed through these games. There's no... Well, Maitland-Niles has made it pretty clear he doesn't want to play right back. Socrates has been injured. Cedric is injured. Bellerin is pretty much it for us as far as right backs go. He is still recuperating from a long-term injury. And I suspect that is a factor. I'm not going to say that's the only reason, but I think that's a factor in why Arteta is kind of playing him in a slightly more inhibited role. That said, I mean, there are still elements of his performance that I think you can question. You know, yesterday I thought his, and I've seen this point made elsewhere, his passing was a bit conservative at times and not as progressive as it might be.
Well, it just wasn't. I think it was just bad, his passing yesterday. Like, eye-catchingly bad, and that's unusual for him. You know, he's usually quite good on the ball, technically good, but yesterday his passing was well off. I mean, how much would you put that down to the fact that, you know, we've played three games in a week and he's played 90 minutes in all of them, having had a fairly substantial layoff and everything else?
I think it could be a bit big factor, and I would be surprised if he plays against Sheffield United at the weekend. I really would. I think that if Socrates is available, I think Arteta might drop him in there. I just don't know that you can keep pushing Bellerin like this and not expect repercussions. I also think there's a discussion here about the sort of shape of the team, and, you know, the left wing is really promising and encouraging in terms of Tierney, Saka, Aubameyang. The right-hand side is not clicking quite so much, and that's partly deliberate. I mean, there is definitely a left-sided emphasis in this team. I think that, you know, Bellerin and Pepe, the precise mechanics of that relationship still, I think, need calibrating, don't they? And I think that, you know, it's not clicking too often, really.
It doesn't look like a natural kind of fit, does it? You know?
But is that partly instruction? Do you know what I mean?
I don't know. I mean, I made the point in the first part of the show that we don't get the ball to Pepe enough. I'm just going to have a look and see from yesterday. You know, Pepe only got 8 passes in the entire game. I think one of them might have been from Hector Bellerin. I'm just trying to...
I think it was 2. But, 2. You know, there was a stat that Bellerin, I think, passed infield to Mustafi 12 times and out to Pepe twice. I mean, it was not really, the ball wasn't really progressing down that flank. And look, it's not all on Bellerin. I mean, Pepe has to kind of make himself available, but he's clearly under instruction to stick to that touchline. And I actually think in any Mikel Arteta team, a bit like in any Pep Guardiola team, you know, there will be a wide player dictated to stay on each touchline to spread the play, give the team width. You know, and Arsenal had Saka as that most extreme player on the left-hand side going forward yesterday, and he often is Saka, and Pepe on the right. And it's not perfect for Pepe. It's not really where he can affect games most, can be most dangerous, sort of coming into that inside channel. But it is seemingly where Arteta wants him. And, you know, he is doing that job for the team as much as anything, but it does not lend itself massively to the individual qualities of the players we have on that particular side. I mean, are you worried about Bellerin?
Yeah, a little bit, all right. I can see, you know, 3 games in 3 days, playing 90 minutes in all of them. You know, that's tough for a player who's been out for a while, and I think it's just tough in the current circumstances anyway. You know, I can't think of, is Mustafi the only other one to do 90 minutes in all the other games? Aubameyang, maybe?
Aubameyang, yeah. I think.
And Mustafi, yeah. So only three of them maybe have done it. I'm a little bit worried, all right. I feel like The cruciate injury has had a big impact on him. I feel like the ankle injury he had before has had a big impact on him. I spoke to you, was it to you the other day? I'm just wondering about, like, what are the stats telling us, you know, behind the scenes? What are the physical stats? What are the sprint stats? What are the pace, you know, the stamina, you know, his ability to get up and down the line? Is part of the reason he's being instructed to play the way he's playing because he can't play any other way? Because there are some physical issues there. I mean, I don't know. I'd just be fascinated to see, you know, if the pace, I mean, it's clear to me anyway that the pace, certainly with my eyes, the pace he used to have is not the pace he has right now. And, you know, how much of his game was dependent on that pace is another question. And players can develop as they get older. I'm okay with being patient. It feels a little bit like, I guess if they had, like, serious, serious concerns over Bellerin's ability, they might have set their sights a little bit higher than Cedric Suarez in terms of a right-back signing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, who knows? We've seen so little of Suarez, we've seen nothing of him, that it's very difficult to assess what sort of player we've got there. But based on the people I know who watched him at Southampton, I don't think he's going to be a dramatic improvement on Bellerin, that's for sure.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, I have seen a few whispers just doing the round on social media, not necessarily grounded in anything, saying, you know, could Bellerin be one of those players who's in a position where Arsenal might be thinking about selling him at some point? You know, he's still got 3 years remaining on his contract.
Mm.
But you know, he's 25, he's at an age where he'd have a decent resale value. That could be a possibility for Arsenal if they need to raise funds.
But I mean, that money would then have to be reinvested back into
a right back.
Into a right back. There's no question about that. You cannot sell Bellerin and have Suarez as your first choice because now you've no backup again. And like you say, I think Suarez will be a steady enough kind of a player. You know, he's plenty of experience at Premier League level and international level, but he's not going to take you anywhere you want to go in a hurry, you know? Right. I see him, the logic to signing him as backup to add depth to the right back position, that's fine. But that I don't know that you can really develop your team.
Yeah, the funny thing is, when we signed Cedric, I was like, oh God, there's a massive gulf there in terms of quality between him and Bellerin. And I suppose the thing that speaks most to my concern about Bellerin is right now, I'm not sure we would massively feel the difference. And
yeah.
That's partly because Bellerin's not playing great, and it is also because Bellerin's role has been adapted to be a little bit more conservative and a little bit more defensive, which is actually generally where Cedric is too. You know, he's not a dribbler. He's not someone who carries the ball massively. He's someone who kind of will tuck in and play a bit more of a defensive game. And I also do think, is it instructive in some ways that Arteta in January, when he needed a short-term solution, as we thought was the time, went for Cedric. Maybe he was looking at how lopsided our team is and the fact that that is what he requires more from a right-back. But it would be great to have an overlapping right-back option too.
Mm.
And the question now is, can Bellerin still do that? And I think we have to give him a little bit more time because I think it's 2 years, isn't it, they say, the recovery. I mean, where are we now? We're about 18 months or something like that. I think we've got to give him that full 2 years, but I have my concerns, I'll be honest.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, I think it's your question.
Yes, let me have a look. This is a question about, it's actually to me, but I'll put it to you as well.
Okay.
Martin Webb says, would James like to review his opinion about the role and impact Reece Nelson will have over this period? Hasn't started a game and very few minutes from the bench, despite the 5-sub rule. I'm a big fan of his, but concerned at his continued lack of game time. I mean, yes, so far I was wrong about that. I did think that Nelson would play more minutes, and I think he probably would. I think I thought he probably would have earned a start by now too.
Mm.
What do I put it down to? I guess It's a little bit the shape. It's the fact that Aubameyang is one of those wide players, and that's pretty much a cert. And then you've got on the other flank, Saka played the first game, Pepe has played since then. And obviously, for different reasons, they've both sort of done enough to be in the team. But I am a little bit surprised he's not been used as a sort of closer in games.
Well, you know, he was against Brighton, and you know, he wasn't particularly great for the Brighton winner. So
maybe that's part of it.
I think he'll start on Sunday.
Do you?
I think he will start on Sunday, because I think Arteta is going to have to rotate. And I actually have a question on this. It comes from Aubameyang FC, who's at Aviv_Lavi on Twitter, who says, with 5 of the 8 remaining FA Cup teams above us in the league, what do you think our chances of winning the competition this season are? So that's one question. And then I just wanted to expand it into what you kind of think Arteta is going to do with his team on Sunday. Because, you know, we've played 3 games in a week, basically. What's the next game after? What is the next game after the
I don't know. I sort of, I only really have thought about this block of games. It's Norwich at the Emirates on Wednesday evening.
So, yeah, so we're doing Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday. Look, I think he's going to have to rotate quite a lot.
Yes, because there's a big, tough period coming up after that, because we play Norwich, then we go away to Wolves, host Leicester, and go away to Spurs, and then host Liverpool. So it's not an easy or pleasant run in that period.
No, it's not. So, right, let's start. What do you think our chances of winning the FA Cup are?
Well, I had to go back and look at who's still in it.
Remind me, because I've forgotten as well.
We've got Sheffield United away, and then it's Norwich versus Manchester United.
Right.
Leicester versus Chelsea.
Right.
And Newcastle against Man City.
Right.
I mean, there's some strong teams there. You've got Chelsea, Man City and Man U potentially in your semi-final.
So what we need to do, A, is beat Sheffield United, which is going to be very difficult because they've been very, very good this season and we know precisely how good they've been. Mm-hmm. We need Norwich to beat Manchester United.
Mm.
Who are Chelsea playing?
Leicester. I mean, that's a toss-up, really.
So we need Leicester to beat Chelsea. And we need Newcastle to beat Man City. And then we need to get Norwich in the semi-final.
Yeah.
And then Newcastle to beat Leicester in the other semi-final. And we play Newcastle in the final. And we win 2-0 with goals from Mark Overmars and Nicolas Anelka.
Yeah, basically. I mean, looking at that, I'm not too optimistic about winning the FA Cup. Are you?
No.
But it is the FA Cup, and we have done it before. We beat Man City in a semi-final and Chelsea in a final. You know?
Yeah. Look, we've been there, done that, and we've had some great success in this particular tournament. I mean, it's a tricky one for Arteta because, look, the Premier League is... it looks difficult for us to finish in the top 6. I must remind myself of the table. Where are we exactly? We're now in 9th. Okay, so we're like 6 points off Wolves, which makes that Wolves game a real 6-pointer. And also the Tottenham game is a 6-pointer as well in qualification for Europe terms. Mm. 3 games in the FA Cup, cup football, for all the surprises that it can throw up and everything else. It's a tricky one because he needs to rest players, but also the FA Cup is a chance of a trophy, a chance of success, a chance to get into Europe. Oh, it's tough. It is difficult.
What sort of team do you think we'll see then at the weekend?
I'm just trying to think. I don't think he can play Bellerin. I don't think he can play Holding. Because we have to respect the fact that Holding's been out for a long time as well. And... you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Holding, but again, it depends on the physical tests and how well players are playing. Ceballos, has played quite a lot, hasn't been particularly good. So do we give Willock a start in the FA Cup? Maitland-Niles, you know, I think he's going to have to rotate just simply because, you know, the players have done a lot in a short period of time after a long break. So I think they're just the physical demands and the realities of that situation are going to mean we're going to have to change things. So
is David Luiz available?
Yeah.
I think he is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, well, Emi Martinez remains the cup goalkeeper, I think. I don't think Matt Macy will play.
No.
I think he'll play Socrates at right back and then Mustafi and Luiz, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'll play Tierney. I think he'll play Kolasinac. Then in front
he'll play
of that,
Xhaka. He'll definitely play Xhaka.
Xhaka will play.
I mean, Guendouzi could come back in. He's had a little rest. Maybe they smooth things over, and you've got a nice fresh Guendouzi to fit into your midfield.
Maybe. I think Aubameyang will play. I just feel like. Well, I feel like he can sort of sustain it better than some players, and I think he's just so important.
Lacazette
will play. And then
Nelson or Pepe.
Yeah, I mean maybe Saka, I don't know where, maybe Saka won't play. I feel like Saka will play, but I've got no idea where.
Yeah, I mean again, maybe if he's feeling the ankle or whatever it might be just wise to leave him out or at least have him on the bench. I mean, is Mesut Ozil going to play?
Well, he's not played a minute, has he, so far?
Just the cup, though, and, you know.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he could do. I mean, he is a fresh option, and we're going to need them. I mean, that run of fixtures is absolutely punishing. So maybe it is time to play Mesut Ozil. Do you think anything of the fact he's not played a minute? Do you think that's making a point from Arteta, or do you think it's sort of he wants to give the game time to the kids?
Maybe a little from column A, a little from column B. He did say afterwards that he doesn't pick his team, you know, to send a message to anyone. He picks his team to win games. I mean, I didn't see a scenario in yesterday's game which would have made me confident of the introduction of Mesut Ozil at any point, even if I could recognize that there's a dearth of creativity and passing ability in midfield. I don't know that 1-0 away from home against Southampton is when you put on Mesut Ozil. If you're 1-0 down with 20 minutes to go, maybe you put him on. If you're 3-0 up with 20 minutes to go, there's a good case to say, yeah, let him on there and let him do his thing. But 1-0 away from home, that's not an Ozil scenario. Yeah. Is there something to be read into the fact that he hasn't played a single minute? That the most, you know, the most visceral image or the most we've seen of Mesut Ozil is basically him sitting there with an umbrella. I think there is something to read into that because he was so involved under Arteta before the lockdown. So there is, you can't be blind to what's happening. I just feel like he's there as a bit of reassurance in the squad if the circumstances allow him to be used. And against Southampton yesterday, I don't think the circumstances were there.
Yeah, if you're a couple of goals up and you want someone to come on and help you keep the ball and, you know, look tidy, I think, or if you need to break down a packed defence, of course you want him there. And actually, I think taking him sort of saves a conversation as well, doesn't it? I mean, from Arteta's point of view, leaving him out entirely means that's what your press conference is about. I don't think he had to talk about it yesterday.
No.
Because if you win, it's no one mentions it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, like you say, it's a bit from column A, a bit from column B. I'm not adverse to him coming back in at the weekend. I think, you know, Arteta said squad management regarding Guendouzi, but I think really squad management in terms of keeping it fresh in this period is going to be absolutely critical, especially if we have any ambitions of an FA Cup run.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we'll wait and see what he does on Sunday. It's a game that we will discuss on the Arsecast Extra on Monday. Hopefully we're talking about a good win, a good performance. I'd be happy to talk about a bad win. I don't really mind.
I mean, this wasn't a brilliant win, was it? And we enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Any win will do. Any win will do.
We are literally the thirsty man in the desert who would be happy to lap out of a dirty puddle because, you know, we don't have any water at the moment. But there you go. Needs must, and you enjoy things in their own context. But look, we will see. We've got to run because there are time pressures today. Thank you as ever for being here. Thank you for being with us. And we're glad to be able to chat about an Arsenal win in this post-lockdown. I mean, the last time, James, we did a podcast about an Arsenal win was back in March after the game against West Ham. So that's 3.5 months ago. So from our point of view, it's very welcome. Hopefully you've enjoyed it too. Enjoy your weekend. Fingers crossed for Sunday. And we will catch you on Monday with a brand new Arscast Extra. Until then.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.